This week in Retronauts, it's not a trick, Michael. It's an illusion. Hello and welcome once again to Retronauts, the retro gaming podcast that is sometimes presented by a British man named Stuart Jip. That's me, and that's our unique selling point. Now, normally on these podcasts, as you'll recall, I'm completely alone and talking to myself, but not this time. This time I have two other people with me, and I have to say, I'm very sorry, but they are people who have been here before, so if you were hoping for some new names, not today, not this time. Let's go in alphabetical order by first name once again, and check in with the first guest.
Hello, it's Epic John Linneman here, talk about some Mickey Mouse action, 16-bit style. Yes, we're back to talk more platformers.
And also joining us today...
Hello, this is Thomas Nickel. I am from M Games. I'm a freelance writer and a lecturer, and I can promise you that none of these games will make you miserable.
Nice.
Well, maybe one of them.
Nice, I like it. Today we're talking about something that's extremely near and dear to my heart, to the point that... Okay, let me lay this out for you. Now, this is not going to ring that true, but I genuinely don't tend to get that annoyed about video games. It is actually quite rare. I can be cynical about video games, I can be sarcastic about video games, but getting genuinely annoyed, that doesn't really happen that much. When they tried to do this series again in a more modern time, I got genuinely annoyed because they're not allowed to. Now, what we're talking about here is the Disney's Illusion series, the .. of Illusion series, which is not the biggest series, but I think there's enough there to get our teeth into. And that's, of course, comprising, how many? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 games, although only 6 of them I'd call really legitimate efforts.
All the classic ones.
Basically, yes. Though we'll see when we get there, but what it amounts to is 4 games, or 5 games and a remake of one of those games, or should I say 2 of those games. We'll get there. Now, the fascinating thing about this is Cast of Illusion, the original game in this series, Mickey Mouse. So, Cast of Illusion starring Mickey Mouse to give it its full title, though I believe it was originally just titled Mickey Mouse on the back of, like, the Mega Drive box where it's, like, pictured. I think it just says Mickey Mouse, but that might be for space reasons. In Japan, it's called I Love Mickey Mouse, which is a bit presumptuous, if you ask me.
Well, the Japanese do love their Disney and do love their Mickey Mouse. If you've ever been to a Japanese Disney store, these things are humongous.
I haven't been to a Japanese Disney store. Honestly, if I was in Japan, I would probably importantly not go into the Disney store. I would avoid it.
Yeah, same with me, but friends of mine always have orders from various Disney stores, so I just I do it begrudgingly because, honestly, I find these Disney stores quite cloying, quite gauche. Oh dear.
They're just very gauche, aren't they? I would go to the HoloLife store, which is probably much better. So I guess the best place to start with, I'll ask John first, as I did before. What's your first sort of encounter with the Illusion series, and what's your sort of history with it?
Well, so I actually came to this one slightly later than you guys because I was also late to the Mega Drive or Genesis party.
Yeah,
maybe Mega I'm a little
Drive.
Bit.
It's Mega Drive, John. It's okay. We can say Mega Drive.
I prefer Mega Drive. I prefer
it's a better name.
As is right and true. Please continue.
Since we're talking history, though, I knew it was the Genesis.
Yeah.
Weirdly enough, I actually came to this one after playing Capcom's Magical Adventure games.
Oh wow!
On the Super NES, right? Mm. I played that first, and I really liked that. But I was also really big into Sega. And, you know, Sonic was already out by the time I got my hands on this, but then I picked this up and played it and was blown away. Like, it was an early game for the system, but man, it felt so just playable, right? It's one of those platform games you just go through where you're just like, this is just a good, wholesome, solid platform game.
Yeah.
And it looks great. Even for such an early game, it looked really great and it just had this vibe to it. And it kind of stuck with me for a while. And then I ended up playing its Genesis sequel, But then the Master System ones, which we'll talk about, I actually didn't play those for like 15 years after that point, right?
I mean, that's
and I was surprised by them too. Like, these are amazing for the system especially.
I mean, that's an interesting perspective, because like, I genuinely to this point had never considered the idea that anyone on the planet would have played the Magical Quest games without being completely and fully aware of the Mega Drive ones. Even though now that I think about it, that's probably very common.
Absolutely, absolutely.
It's just, to me, it's just kind of like, whoa, okay, all right. But Thomas, what about you? What was your experience with these games?
So my experience, to just give the context again to that, I was newish to games. I loved the Game Boy. I loved some computer games, and then I had the opportunity to get a console for Christmas. So much thinking, that was in Christmas 1991, what do I get? Do I follow the Nintendo propaganda and get the NES as everybody does? Or will I just take the risk and go to something new? And so I decided, okay, why not? Let's get a Mega Drive. Why not a Mega Drive?
Oh, hell. Wow, yes.
So it was ordered. Sonic was the pack-in, so I had one more slot for a free game. I thought, okay, what's the big stuff right now? And I just went for, okay, let's take that Mickey Mouse game, because the reviews back then said it was really good, and I like platformer games, I like jump-and-run games, as they call them over here in Germany. Yeah. So it was that. And then Christmas rolled along, I got the console with Sonic, with Castle of Illusion. I had no idea what a Mega Drive game looked like in motion back then, so...
Wow, first you impression must have been on- mind-blowing.
Yeah, I mean, you know that scene from Simpsons, right? When Milhouse enters his name in Bones. In
yeah,
Bones Tom.
Yeah.
Pretty much like that. Amazing. So I played Sonic first, and oh my god, this is the future. This is amazing and absolutely brilliant. Then I put in Castle of Illusion, and at first I thought it was a bit quaint, a bit slower, a bit maybe a bit mushier than Sonic. But I think over the next couple of days, I really warmed up to it and just found out how good this really is and how different from Sonic. And yeah, it's just nice to have these two incredibly good and very, very different platform games. Yeah. And I played them both for hours on end in these weeks after Christmas.
That's awesome. Yeah, they really do make a great pair, don't they?
Yeah.
It's, I mean, for me personally, like, this is, like, so formative for me, because Castle of Illusion, which was like one of the earliest sort of games that I played, because I sort of owning my own thing, because I got a Master System console for Christmas in either, I can't remember if it was 92 or 93. It was probably 93. And, I'm like, what, like 5, 6 at this point. And, the Master System that I got, it had, Alex Kidd built into it, and it had a Sonic cartridge with it. It was that pack-in set, Master System 2, the Toaster one. But I also got separately Castle of Illusion. And, that was my favorite one. Like it almost immediately became my favorite one, because, there's just something so playable and likable about it. It's just such a good looking game. Like I think it looks better than Sonic on Master System. It's just so clean.
Yeah. And it runs better too.
But one of my sort of earlier memories of this is because I was so new to games, I just really awful at playing them. And Castle of Illusion on the Master System is like kind of hard.
Considering. It's a difficult game.
Yeah. And, it's hard. I'm incapable of finding it difficult now for obvious reasons, I think I can. I think it's definitely more difficult than the Mega Drive one by some
big
distance.
Time.
Yeah.
And my memory of this is it comes with both practice and normal modes, and practice mode is just three very, very short levels, very short. And I couldn't do it at all. Particularly, I couldn't do level 3, which is an auto scroller. It's a chocolate factory. It's an auto-scrolling level. And for me, at that time, at that age, it was not possible for me. And one day I remember coming home from school and finding my parents, my appalling evil parents, had got on my computer without my permission and had finished it. They had finished my game before me. On practice mode, yes. But the level of, like, transgression, you know, the violation that is. It was appalling. I was appalled. My parents aren't actually appalling and evil. I just was doing that for a joke. I thought I'd make that clear. Thank you. So this game is just like real resonant for me, really just a big one. And for a long time, I really wasn't capable of recognizing the Mega Drive one as being nearly as good as that. Because for me, it's the opposite way around for a lot of people. The Master System is the main one, and the Mega Drive is like, whatever, it's the other version, you know? But let's get into the Mega Drive one. 1990 release, so pre-Sonic. So,
yeah.
John, you're very good at this sort of history stuff, so maybe you could give us a sort of a precis of what was going on in the sort of console's lifespan here.
So I think this is important to consider because Sega was not yet a powerhouse. The Mega Drive Genesis would become a huge hit in Europe and North America, of course, but in 1990, it was still kind of the new kid on the block coming off of the somewhat failed Master System, at least in North America.
And Japan,
of course, yes. So it was tough for Sega, I think, during these early days, and they were still in that state of trying to find the thing that would work for them, right? The Super NES was not out yet, right? But the hype was huge. It would have been out, I guess, in Japan when this game launched, but not in North America. And
certainly not in Europe.
Yeah, exactly. So basically, Sega had like a year and some change to convince consumers that, no, this is the 16-bit machine you want. And they did that by getting access to various licenses and personalities and sports figures, right? That's why you've got all the commercials. You got like Michael Jackson. You've got film-based games like Rambo. Well, you've got all the sports games.
Yeah, would that account for like Super Monaco, GP?
That actually not. That's an earlier thing. That was also an arcade machine.
But having Ayrton Senna involved.
I think that is connected with that, yeah.
Right, kind of.
I would still say it's connected, where it's like they're capitalizing on popular brands and ideas.
But John, tell me this quickly. I think F1 racing is not a thing in the States, right?
I mean, it's not non-existent, but it's certainly not popular as it is around the rest of the world, I suppose. Mm. So at this point, then, Sega had really not established a mascot either. They tried with Alex Kidd. Boy, did they try. But the first attempt at Alex Kidd on the Mega Drive was actually kind of awful. Am I fair to say that? Would you guys agree?
I mean, it's not the worst Alex Kidd game, obviously, but it's probably like the second or third worst. I mean, if we got to rank them. I think it's just basically like if Miracle World was kind of shitty and boring, and because I like Miracle World, you know. It's like a less good Miracle World.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much. That's
a good way to look at it.
And I mean, it's less good on a better console, though. That's not a good mix.
No, it's not. And they had like Altered Beast as a pack-in, right? Which is a good game in retrospect, but it's not that interesting of a pack-in title. Yeah. There's not a lot of depth there. It's just a very basic arcade game. So they had this problem. And by 1990 as well, like the NES was still hot, right? It was still selling gangbusters. And this is where a lot of the best games released for Nintendo systems. Yeah, this is when they all showed up. Developers were pushing the heck out of that system. So you got the NES still kicking butt. Nintendo is teasing and hyping up their next 16-bit machine. And then you have Sega here, along with, I guess, NEC would be entering the ring, if not already, I guess by that point, trying their hand at it as well. So it was kind of this three-way throwdown, knockout kind of battle. So one of those IP that Sega went after is, of course, Mickey Mouse. It's a popular character, of course, and Disney seems to have obviously been on board with them, and so they started development by putting different teams on these various Disney games. And we're not going to talk about the Western attempts like Fantasia today, but they actually assembled some very talented Japanese developers within Sega to produce, well, this game and all the games we'll be talking about mostly today, and they did a phenomenal job.
Mm-hmm. But I'm also surprised because you say the phenomenal team. I agree absolutely, but many of them were still unknowns, especially the director, Emiko Yamamoto.
That's right.
This was her first game, and they gave her such a big IP and such an important game. And I mean, she lived up to the challenge.
You're not wrong, Thomas, but I do. It is kind of like indicative of the way Sega was sort of doing business back then, where a lot of those designers that would become like rock star designers within Sega, I mean, their initial projects, they had to start somewhere. Yep. And they were given these big responsibilities, and they largely delivered. And I think that's what gave a lot of Sega games such a unique flavor at the time, is because you'd have a new director step in, and the games were still small enough where you could use a small team and have complete control over the development, that they were able to just come up with crazy ideas and concepts that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily expect. And I definitely think you see that here, where it feels like she's like really leaning into, like really referencing the Disney aspect of this and say, how can we turn these fantastical Disney drawings and art and all this stuff into a game that's actually compelling?
And she also has an approach, I think, a bit like that early Miyamoto stuff, like Donkey Kong, just coming in. Nobody is there to tell her this. You can't do that. It doesn't work. We just do it. So why not just flip level on the head? Let's do that.
Absolutely.
It's interesting because I think this game, it captures something from thinking about sort of what Mickey Mouse cartoons are like, you know, I mean, it does capture something of the feel of the kind of, like, say, for example, the Mad Doctor, which is later used, obviously, in Mickey Mania more directly. Yeah. But here, I think they capture the sense of like, menace about those old cartoons. But also, I feel like there must be some inspiration taken from, like, the European Mickey Mouse comics, where he's cast in these kind of roles more frequently, right? I mean, it doesn't feel very cartoony. In a way, it's all very rendered in a very like pastely kind of almost quasi realistic sort of a sense to me. The only thing that sort of stands out is you've got your the enemy sprites. I mean, everything fits together in the world, but it's not very like Dayglo. It's not very what I would have thought of as Mickey Mouse nowadays. Like back then, I guess there was more of a. This character is versatile. This character can be cast anywhere because, in a sense, you get the impression that they could almost lift Mickey out of this and put back in just a sort of a generic character. But then I don't know how to explain what I mean. It's just unusual from what you'd expect from a Mickey Mouse game, I think. And
I think what they did is they looked at the old Disney movies like Sleeping Beauty and stuff like that with more muted colors and these detailed worlds and these forests in movies like this. The forests
are really
a bit scary and a bit
And of course,
menacing.
Like the final boss does take the form of the old lady from Snow White as well, initially.
The thing about the visuals in this game that always struck me was how the things you mentioned there, of course, but this sort of game would change so dramatically in the years that followed in terms of the visual design, right? We saw the rise of the quote-unquote Digicel style stuff made popular by like the Aladdin game, right?
Yep.
And there was this push to make animated-based games look like the cartoons in a unique way. It's like, oh, we got to get this cell animation in here. It needs to look and move like a cartoon. But this predates that. And this has more of a, I would say, it honestly, to me, looks like a mid to late 80s Sega arcade game. Like something they would have done on the System 16. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where it's just, there's a lot of detail in the pixel art. It's not like super bright primary colors. And it just moves and animates really well. And that's something Sega was really good at. And I think it really showcases like what you got with the Genesis / Mega Drive versus the 8-bit NES or even the Master System, though.
Yeah,
the Master System version looks good too, of course.
Yeah. If you compare that stuff, if you compare now Castle of Illusion with Alex Kidd, for example, Alex Kidd is just this one static sprite standing there, maybe blinking over every once in a while. But Mickey Mouse is always swaying back and forth, has this beautiful jump animation, different jump animations, has this arm wiggling when he's standing at an edge. All these things that give the character so much more life.
When you're running down the slope and he's like panicking as well, that's really
that's
cute.
Great.
So, I mean, let's talk about sort of about the basic sort of mechanics here briefly, which is that...
Yeah, that's a very brief thing because they're simple, in a good way.
Very simple. You've got, you know, move, you've got jump, you've got what the butt bounce, which is pressing jump again while in midair, which lets you... you can not just kill enemies, but you can also bounce high off them, which is used quite early on, in fact, as a necessary move.
Which also feels really, really good.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
Now, considering, I'll get to a side, I won't go on a tangent right now, but I will in a second, sorry. You can also throw objects like marbles and things that you find in the levels as projectiles, a bit like, a fire flower, but they're just straight ahead like projectiles that go horizontally. Now, the butt bounce. Now, coming to this from the Master System version, because I didn't play this game until like emulation, I had no means of playing it. I couldn't figure out the butt bounce because in the Master System version, pressing doing the butt bounce means you've got to press button 2, then button 1. In this, that's not the case. I press C, and then I press one of the other buttons. It didn't do anything, and I couldn't jump on enemies. And I was like, wow, it's weird that you can't jump on enemies in this game. So I get to the third stage, I think it is, the storm, sort of the forest, latest forest stage with the tree you got to climb.
Ghosts.
Yeah, and I couldn't get past that. I eventually figured out you can hold down on the D-pad to make him do the butt bounce, but he won't bounce high off of it. Then that I got stuck for ages trying to figure that out until I eventually realized, oh, it's C twice. It's just a really brief thing, but it's just, I find it funny how I had almost the opposite experience to everyone else with this game. Though I do like it a lot. I think it's great. I mean, taking those few mechanics, they rather sensibly make this quite diverse sort of game. Like, it's not very long, but it keeps changing the visuals keep changing, and the way that you play keeps changing as a result.
Yeah,
so there is a nice sense of variety.
I'd like also to talk a bit about that, how the stages change over time.
We could just rock through them, really, because the thing is, there are only technically 5 stages, but there's so many different environments within those stages.
Right, because they're broken up into chunks, right? Like, that's interesting. Yeah. Each chunk is its own unique thing, almost like a set piece.
The first stage alone has 3 very different set pieces.
Mm-hmm.
You have the forest with everything, with some swinging around, with that apple rolling after you. Basic, nice first stage. Then you have that spider web stage with entirely new backgrounds, very beautiful music, and this is a very impressive background, I think. And then back to the forest, it gets dark, you have ghosts, and you have this nice gloomy music. So you do a lot. You really have a feeling you are crossing, you're covering ground, and stuff is changing around you, and you are on adventure, not just playing levels after levels.
Yeah, and that's why I would say, like, even though it's technically all part of the first stage, it kind of feels like 3 separate stages, like you would see in, say, a Mario game, you know?
Yeah,
each chunk is about as long as a Mario level.
The way they delineate the stage is almost as arbitrary, in a sense.
Not that it
doesn't actually matter, obviously. It's not a downer for the game. I mean, every level is offering some kind of new interesting thing, which, you know, you'd expect it to, but, like, when you get to the toy stage, first of all, you've got this fantastic, you've got that vertical stage where when you make your way up and then run all the way back down again, which is really, really cool and memorable. The stage where you flip the stage, killing everything that's on the screen.
Yeah, that's cool.
Which is really, really fun. And now you don't walk. Do you walk on the ceiling? I can't remember this. Or does it just flip the stage?
Yes, you do.
You walk on the ceiling.
Yes. Which is, again, that's prefigures like a gimmick that I've... I mean, is that the first platform game to do the upside down gimmick? Surely it can't be.
What was that one?
It's the first one I can remember.
I'm sure there's something somewhere on a home computer with a name we forgot about.
Yeah. But
probably one of the first that was really noted by many people.
What about Metal Storm? When did Metal Storm come out in the
Metal
NES?
Metal Storm, right.
Oh, that was 91, actually.
Oh, yeah,
so
the NES.
That was
but
later.
That might have been after this. That was
91.
It was before Mega Man 5, which did it with Gravity Man, obviously.
That's right.
So, yeah, I'm going to preemptively give that to Mickey Mouse.
Actually, quick. My theory on this, looking at the way this game's built and broken up, is that the developers here may have been inspired by Sega's arcade heritage, because it feels designed more like an arcade game than a typical home console game. You know, the type where it needs to come up with something unique and flashy on every single level, which, you know, normally with a platform game, you'd see like a lot of tile reuse and like they'd build many levels around the same theme and you beat all those levels, where here it's like, no, each chunk is completely different.
Yeah.
And I think that's cool.
I agree. I mean, I could just kind of gush about some of the kind of gimmicks here that I only initially saw here, like the ruin stage where it fills up with water, which then retracts.
Cool.
That's really cool. I mean, and then, you know, they were even ripping that off in Crash 3, for God's sake. The swimming stage where it's like a maze that keeps flinging you back towards the start again. Mm-hmm. Maybe one of the better examples of that kind of gameplay, because that usually sucks, but here it's so kind of brief and it's almost puzzle-like, and it's one of the few puzzles in the game as well.
Also, just one thing to mention is, I think stage 3 with that water maze has such a gorgeous cloud background.
The orange
so
and purple
it's so
clouds.
Yeah, yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, man, the artwork
wonderful
is
mood.
Evocative.
I'm kind of a sucker for collapsing ruins stage as well, so I really like that one. I also like the one in the Jungle Book game, but we'll get to that another day. If we ever do the Disney dregs, which I fully intend to, listeners. The library stage is, as I think Thomas has maybe written here, the best stage, because
at least in my opinion.
I mean, I find that hard to disagree with. There's a lot of cool stuff going on in that stage. When you've got a lot, as Mickey's sort of been, not sort of formally shrunk down, but he's really wee. And he's running around on books and stuff. Yeah. And it's really cute. And you go in a teacup
you
and
fight
do
bookworms, and you fight the letters walking around. Letter A is coming after you.
Yeah, and it's really cute.
What about the stage with all like the spinning gears and everything?
That's the last one. Yeah.
That's that always reminded me of that's what I was gonna say.
It's sorry, this is just Castlevania. I jumped on you there. Sorry, I apologize.
No, that's right. I mean, so I'm not alone in thinking that. Then that's good.
No, I mean, I didn't really make that connection until relatively recently when I was playing the Master System one again. I was like, hang on a minute. What I will say, now, the premise of this game, and just not that it matters, is that, you know, Minnie Mouse is being kidnapped by Ms. Rebel, who's jealous of her beauty for some reason, because she looks exactly like Mickey, but just never mind. I never really thought about that before. It's really strange. She's like, I want to look like a mouse, too.
It really
too.
Is.
Yeah. But anyway, then Ms. Rebel being this kind of, as I mentioned, the old lady from Sleeping Beauty, but she transforms into a closer to Maleficent, but not actually Maleficent, which is kind of weird. You'd think it would just be Maleficent, but then maybe that would be confusing.
I mean, they often did that in the game, just have enemies look like Disney characters, but not quite so.
Yeah. I saw on one of the wikis that it says that the boss for the clock tower is the giant from Mickey and the Beanstalk, but it's not. I mean, I don't know why they said that.
I mean, there is a bit of a likeness, but that's it.
It's very, very, very mild likeness. Also, I think the only likeness is they're both humans. Yeah. That's about it.
Although the dragon boss in stage 4, yeah, it does look a bit like that from that one Disney dragon movie I forgot the English name of.
The Reluctant Dragon or Pete's Dragon.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it does look a bit like Pete's Dragon.
There is a certain likeness, but still.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It's its own thing.
I mean, I've always wanted to kill Pete's Dragon, so, I mean, that's nice.
There you go.
Yeah. The bosses in this game in general are kind of just like, I mean, none of them are that difficult, but they're all kind of cool and fun.
That first one, though, that really is, that feels like prototype to Kirby.
It could be, with the prototype for Wispy Woods, because, you know, we've talked about it on Retronauts before, but Kirby's hatred of that tree is just like beyond me. I really don't get it.
It spans generations.
He's just walking along with his mates.
He really hates that tree.
Yeah. He doesn't even need to go to the tree. He's just like, I finished World 1. I'll just leave. Oh, hang on. I just see that tree. I've got to go and kill it. Just a minute. And the tree's just desperately trying to make him go away by blowing at him. Sorry, I won't get into it again. It just fascinates me. It really does. Now, my personal approach to this one, my opinion of this one, given that I came from the Master System one, I think this game is quite slow.
It is.
That doesn't mean it's bad. I think you move slowly and it feels slow. Once I find myself adjusted to it, it's fine. But when I first start playing it, I'm usually like, oh my God, I forgot how slow this is, because the Master System one is like maybe twice as fast.
I think the term is deliberate.
It is deliberate, yes. But also, you move in slow motion, okay? Like, when Mickey jumps in the air.
Especially in the PAL version,
it's in
course.
Slow motion. Especially in the PAL version, never experienced.
Yikes.
Yeah. But that's not to say it's bad. It's a game that requires an adjustment to its pace, I think. And that usually takes a level or two. I think that there's a more arcadey feel to this game than there is the Master's one. I think it's more knockabout, like you can take more hits and it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
There's more items to collect and there's more opportunities to heal and stuff. But also in this game, I think you have, I want to say, 5 health by default.
Yeah.
And in the Master System one, you absolutely don't have that. So that's
you die
factor,
a lot more
that's a
in
factor
the
as well. But I'm not going to make that comparison too much, although where else would I make it? This is the place to make that comparison.
Well, when we talk more about the Master System.
Yeah, for sure. So for me, what this feels like is just a different take on that game, though that's not correct, obviously. I think it's very, very, I think it feels very different. I think it plays very differently, but I do think it's very good. I like it a lot.
I have one nitpick, though, that I always have to take with this game, and it's the vine swinging.
Okay.
Because
it's a little bit dodgy,
It's the way they implemented it, and I don't know why, is it causes the camera to sort of update at the same rate as, like, the character sprites. So it basically scrolls like it's, like, 15 frames per second. Even though the game is not actually running that slow, it's just however they opted to do that vine trick, and it looks terrible.
Yeah. It's also a little bit weird jumping on the vine. Sometimes it's not quite right.
It just, I don't know what, something went wrong with that. Like, the idea is interesting and fine, but it just doesn't look good in motion. And that's,
I think it's okay. I think the fact that it's one of the earlier levels and then never happens again is nice, because it gets it out of the way, I suppose. But,
That kind of goes along with the whole unique mechanics per stage thing, right? Where they just implemented that stage. Yeah. It's maybe not as polished as it should be, but it only happens there. So you're like, okay, well.
Yeah. Talking sort of availability of this game, it was obviously a big game on the Mega Drive, and it must have sold well.
It did. It was a top seller for many months.
It was also repackaged in a collection with Quackshot as well, which is the one that I have myself. Right. But it was also re-released on the Saturn with Quackshot and Mickey Mouse Disney Mickey on disc, which is crazy to think about. Whenever I find out that happened, and I'm like, oh my god, are there any extras or anything? It turns out pretty much no. It's just the game on a disc along with Quackshot, which is, nice, but it's also exactly the same as the cartridge. So it raises the question, what's the point? It doesn't matter that much.
I never understood that release, to be honest.
I think it was Japan only.
Part of their Sega Ages line, which they did. That's when Sega Ages kind of became a thing during that era. And a lot of those conversions were amazing, right? Like Arcade Perfect or even Beyond Arcade Perfect, like Outrun had a 60 FPS mode. Fantasy
Star's also great.
Yeah, Fantasy Star's good on there. Afterburner 2.
I'm not that familiar with the Saturn line of Sega Ages. I know the PlayStation 2 line when it was rubbish and then became good.
When M2 got on board.
Yeah, pretty much.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the Sega Saturn version of Sega Ages. Yeah. That started off, there was a fair number of games. They basically had like Space Harrier, Outrun, Afterburner 2, Fantasy Zone.
Nice.
There was a Columns, there was Power Drift, Galaxy Force 2, and then of course I Love Mickey Mouse. And all of those games came out. Most of them, I would say, the arcade ports, except for Power Drift and Galaxy Force, which look arcade perfect but run at 30 frames per second. Oh. All the other ones are basically arcade perfect or better.
That's good.
Like Outrun Arcade runs at 30. But the Saturn version has the option for 60 FPS gameplay and an arranged soundtrack, right?
Okay, that's kind of wild. I have to check this out.
In fact, Space Harrier, Outrun, and Afterburner 2 were packaged together for the U.S. market, and I think Europe as well, but Working Designs put out the U.S. version, and it's just Sega Ages Collection, so it's really, really cool.
I've got to say real quick, because again, it's tangentially relevant, but I recently, I went on one of my desperation kind of Japanese PSN, PS3 sessions, because there are so many goddamn games on that thing that are going to get locked away forever. And I had a few yen left over in my like basket or whatever it's called, my wallet, and I was like, I'm just going to get Galaxy Force 2 because there's nothing else I can afford, and I might be good because it's Sega, and I've played it briefly before and didn't think it was amazing. Yeah, exactly. So I launched this M2 version of Galaxy Force 2, and I have my ass blown off. Holy shit.
So good, yeah.
It's insane how impressive
new version they did, that widescreen, like, remixed version with the, oh man, that's incredible. Yeah,
it's wild. So I recommend anyone who has access to a Japanese PlayStation 3 account. You can do it on any PS3 instantly.
There is a disc version as well, of course, for PS2.
Oh, really? I did not know that. Okay.
That's the version I got, actually.
Of course there is. There's a disc version of PS2, right. Of course there is. I forgot it was an emulated PS2 game. That makes it even... it would be even better on a PS2.
It's really
Holy
good.
Holy lord.
It's so good. So good.
So, if you have a PS3 and a Japanese account for the PS3, get on there, because there's so many cool Sega games you can still buy, and they're going to be gone soon.
Seriously,
they're going to go. Don't sit on this. Like, spend all your money on yen. Do it now. Okay. Anyway, do we have anything else to say about the Mega Drive Class of Illusion?
The final thing I want to raise here is actually the music composer.
Oh yes, of course, the music.
Kamiya-san. It's like Shigenori Kamiya, who is actually a musician famous for synth work.
Oh,
they produced some albums and such in Japan, and among other things. And they took the role on this project and kind of delivered a very evocative score that that feels decidedly Disney-like, but also kind of its own thing, because it really leans in, of course, the synth of the Mega Drive.
Yes, absolutely.
And it sounds great, I think.
Yeah. I think I find, now again, making this comparison, but to me it sounds unusual because it's a more atmospheric, less melodic version of the tunes that I'm familiar with, because the Master System has the same basic melodies, but doesn't have quite so much in the way of the atmospheric stuff, the stuff that draws you in. So while it is still atmospheric, mostly it's just kind of hummable. Whereas this is more kind of like, whoa, hello, here we go. It's very noticeable in the final boss, where the Master System one goes into a tune, and this one is almost dissonant, like scary, like noise. It's good. It's really good. I should probably mention as well that this has been re-released it was part of the pre-order bonus on PS3 for the Castle of Illusion remake. And you can't get that version now in any way unless you pre-ordered it in that window, which is really annoying because it's an M2 emulation, you know?
Yeah. I do have that on my PS3. That's right.
You're very fortunate because I certainly don't. You can also now get it on the Mega Drive Mini. I'm not sure if that's still available though. It was on there along with World of Illusion, which was the first time that they'd been re-released like that, I think.
Honestly,
I think it was the first time World had been re-released.
I would say, Stu, if somebody's listening to this podcast, that probably the most weirdly affordable way, or at least enjoyable way to get it, is just to buy the original cartridges. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah,
these games are very affordable.
Yeah, they will not set you back much.
They are not that expensive.
All the games we're going to talk about today, with the exception of one, won't cost you that much money, basically.
Yeah. They've all sold very well. There's a ton of copies out there, and they're not rare, so.
Yeah, and they're really, really good. So you might want to get them. Sorry, Thomas, you were going to say something else, weren't you?
Yeah, I want to share one more observation, because I just looked over my Mega Drive collection, and I have pretty much all of them in a chronological order up here. And when I look what comes before Castle of Illusion, I would also say most of these games are very, very difficult.
Right, right.
And Castle of Illusion is not an easy game, but it's much more approachable than stuff like, for example, Super Shinobi, or stuff like...
Ghouls and Ghosts.
Ghouls and Ghosts, oh my god, Ghostbusters, stuff like that. Mystic Defender. So I think this is also for Sega a big step into such a great game.
Oh yeah, Mystic Defender is good.
Isn't that like the sort of sequel to Spellcaster, the Master System?
Yep, it is.
Oh, man, that's so cool. That's so cool. I want to get that.
Also, man, Castle of Illusion came out right around the same time as Thunder Force 3 and the Port of Strider.
That's wild.
Good times.
Good times, holy shit.
Seriously,
good
What a good month.
Also, close to Shadow Dancer.
I want to say something on here because it's just wild in me. I mean, I'm jealous that you've got Ghostbusters, because that game's weirdly expensive now.
Is it?
It
pisses me off. It's not even rare. It's freaking good. It's not even that good. Just like, come on, sell me it for like a five or someone. Let's go.
It's a compile game. Do you know that?
Yeah.
Really? That explains
it. It's a compile game.
Okay, that explains everything.
But speak of Ghostbusters, quick aside, did you know that there is a modded version that puts in Winston?
I did see that. Yeah, it improves the gameplay in general.
That's pretty good.
Thank you, CD Romance. But if you download that modded version, remember, people, don't keep it for more than 24 hours. You have to delete it.
I think it's fair to say, though, that we've kind of talked enough about this original game, given how simple it is. I think we all agree as well that it's fantastic, solid little platformer, and still worth playing today. But then we come to the game that, Stu, you've been referencing many times already for good reason.
I can't help it,
Castle of Illusion for the Sega Master System / Game Gear in 1991. And so, again, this is an interesting one, because the Master System, at least in North America, was basically dead at this point. I would say replaced with the Game Gear.
You know, this game was released in the US on cartridge. I have a copy.
It was.
And it must be one of the final like legit releases.
Yeah, I feel like the early 90s that we were starting to see like the end of Master System largely.
It's a shame, because it could have been bigger. It's a real shame.
The thing about this game that I think is worth starting off with before we get into more about it is that when you look at it, you think this is the type of game that the Master System needed. Like, visually, gameplay-wise, this is something that feels like an enhanced NES game in many ways. Like, the colors are more pleasing. It feels like this weird middle child between a 16-bit machine and, like, the NES in a way that early Master System stuff really didn't.
It would look out of place as an early Mega Drive game, to be honest.
I agree. You know, just add some scrolling backgrounds and it would be fine on there.
I mean, it even has some nice scrolling effects.
That's true. It does. The title screen is gorgeous. That looks like a Mega Drive game.
The title screen whips ass. Yeah, it's insane. I love it. I mean, I can't be objective about this game, nor would I want to be. It's
okay.
So important to me. I mean, there was so many years of my life when I would say this is my favorite game of all time. If anyone asked me, it's this.
Oh, man.
It's my favorite classic game of all time. My favorite game of all time is now The Binding of Isaac, but this is my favorite classic game. And on, you know, on a nice day when someone asks me on certain days, I will just say, yeah, it's Castle of Illusion on the Master System. Now, I don't think that's an exaggeration. I think that's a reasonable view to hold because this game is perfect. There are no problems with this game. There are no errors. There are no glitches that I've noticed. There are no bad levels or bad bits of the levels. I think it's just spot on. Like,
it's just a really, really good game.
Yeah. It's short. It's six levels and you're not getting any more than that, but those levels are kind of big. Those levels, some of them have multiple routes to them. There are secrets everywhere, unlike in the Mega Drive game, I want to add, which doesn't have that many secrets at all.
Yeah.
And this is not just going to be me dumping on the Mega Drive game. Okay?
No, it's just a different kind of game. Yeah.
Now, the difference is, while you still have the butt bounce, on the Master System it's activated in the way I mentioned earlier, button 2, then button 1. On the Game Gear, I think they fixed that and made it so it's just button 2 twice again. What you can do here is you can pick things up and throw them. You don't have any marbles to throw, but if you find, like, say, a brick or a block, you can pick it up and you can throw it at enemies. The same with the treasure chest you'll find lying around, which have items in them. All the items except for the gems and the power stars are in treasure chests, and they're everywhere. They're also invisible ones that will only appear if you do a butt bounce attack where they are. And they are, I'm pretty certain I know where they all are, but I can't be 100% certain, which is annoying. God, this game, I can't even begin, I don't even know where to start.
So in my mind, I've always thought about this in a weird way. You remember how Capcom would release things like Strider in the arcade, and then you get this different NES game. They love to release NES versions of arcade games that were very different. That's what this game feels like to me, where if the Genesis Mega Drive version is an arcade game, and it feels like one with its pacing and set piece design, this feels like the 8-bit NES / Master System version of the
home console-y game.
Right?
Yeah.
I really think it does.
I mean, for me, like, trying to make that kind of, I can't think of it that way because it's just so
backwards. I know.
I can't. Well, thinking about the way that the Mega Drive game changes up its visuals by dividing its levels into sort of separate sections, this game changes up its visuals without dividing the levels up. Like, even stage one, you go from a brightly lit forest under the ground into a cave, then down further into a dark forest. What the hell? What's going on there? And it really does create that sense of, like, you're in an illusion, you're in a bizarre environment that makes no sense. And it does it without having this in-between kind of hub thing that not a hub, but just like a corridor you walk along. Here, no, I'm talking crap, you do have a hub. It's the exact opposite of what I said. It's incredibly basic. But it's just literally three doors. So you go through these doors, you can choose which one you go through initially, which you can't do on Mega Drive instantly. So you can go to the forest, you can go to the toy factory, or you can go to the dessert stage, as I'm going to call
it. Which finally has the music from the third Mega Drive stage.
Yeah, the chocolate, which is... So that's the music. That's what that music is to me. It's the chocolate factory theme.
Which doesn't sound chocolatey at all to me, but anyway.
The toy... Yeah, exactly. That's always going to be the case. But even as early as the toy factory, the game is introducing, like, puzzle elements where, for example, you have to, I got stuck on this as a kid. This is what I couldn't get past. There's a bit where you need to use a barrel that you throw to stand on a barrel to reach the clouds that are being puffed out by a toy train that you can stand on. I couldn't figure that out as a child. I didn't know you could stand on them. And even after that, you suddenly start finding keys that open locked doors and things like that. God, the Toy Factory level is a tour de force in this game because it's got so many routes through it with different enemies you'll only see if you go on certain routes. Like, I've played this game hundreds of times and there are genie enemies that I almost never see because I never go in that way, you know? Like, there are just shortcut secrets. You can skip half this level by going through a hidden wall at one point. Oh my God, I love it. You've got so many different enemies on every single level. Like, You've got the trees, you've got the flowers, you've got the bats, you've got the caterpillars. It just doesn't, it just keeps going and going. Like, there's so much to enjoy on every stage. I just want to gush about it. It's that good. It's perfect. It has no flaws. You should definitely play this game. I mean, I'm serious. Like, I cannot think of anything bad to say about it. Maybe, like, the idea that on the later stages, the gems you're supposed to collect, that there are two in the fourth and fifth stages, one of which is hidden in the level, and if you miss it, you've got to go through again. But they're really easy to find, you know? And I don't really have a problem with that, personally. I suppose if you were a high score guy, you could infinitely loop the level, though. So that's a fun option. But everything to me here feels so much tighter that it's almost like the way that Sonic is portrayed on the Mega Drive versus the Master System, because Sonic on the Mega Drive is quite knockabout, like the way I see Mega Drive Castle of Illusion, but Master System Castle of Illusion is tight. Like, it's a real linear, like, test of your skills. It's not super hard, but it's definitely harder. There are plenty of hidden lives and things, but there are so many, like, extra things you can find, extra routes you can take, and it's just, I think it's the better game. I really do. Taking it as it is, for what it is, and taking into account all the cool stuff that's going on here, to me, it's the better game. I mean, which one, the fight with Miserable in this game is prefaced by a fight with a dragon that takes up almost the whole screen, and is really, really cool and challenging. And the Miserable fight is really creative as well, the way you are using these torches that when you're holding them, they light up the screen, but when you're not holding them, everything's pitch black, you can't see what you're doing. And you have to use that as a projectile, so you're constantly going in and out of the darkness while these projectiles are on screen trying to kill you, while Miserable is trying to fly out of your way. It's just really, really cool, you know?
Absolutely, yeah, I agree.
Sorry, I know I gushed a lot there, but it's good. No, like, I love it that much. It makes me so happy, this game.
Yeah, it's just wonderful just hear people being happy about games again these days, because, as you know, we talked about that.
Yeah, we're drowning in sadness these days.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I will say one thing about it. I'm going to give it a mild criticism, which is that the boss of the Toy Factory level is a ripoff of the Yellow Devil from Mega Man, 100% a ripoff. Though it's incredibly easy by comparison, obviously, but it does the exact same attack pattern, more or less.
So one thing I want also to share, one thought is, I think it's amazing what Sega still put into the Master System at that time, when it was basically dead in the two biggest markets, because they had good people sitting on these games, making really good games instead of just watered down Mega Drive ports that look a bit worse and play a bit worse. These are really, really good games, and I mean, this is just one of many. Yeah. I mean, I checked some of the names of people working on that, and you can see them in many exclusive 8-bit games. I mean, a lot of these people went to make that Asterix game, for example, which is really good.
Which you and I just played through recently, Thomas. Yeah. And I had never finished that game before, but it's surprisingly great.
Yeah, that's just what I love about Sega at the time. They don't just drop the Master System like it's
That's also
contagious.
Sega made one of my favorite Jurassic Park games, which is, of course, the Game Gear Master System version, which I think is better than most of the Western developed games.
We talked about that on the Jurassic Park episode of Retronauts, and I also wrote about that in the Game Gear directory that I do recently. And it's... Okay, the Jurassic Park on the Game Gear and the Master System is so weird, because it's it's like a tour de force of visuals for this machine. It's absolutely these machines. It's crazy how impressive it is. But then you'd think the gameplay almost would maybe suffer, but it's really fun to play as well.
Yeah. It has those shooting segments initially, but then you get into the platforming and exploration, and again, it's another one of those Sega 8-bit bangers that they
The screwed up thing is, it's probably still the best Jurassic Park game ever made. I really can't think of one I like better. Maybe something will come around that I've forgotten, probably, but it's just a really, really good.
I think it was just that these times when Sega had these designs on the work, Master System 8-bit games, who could maybe just do interesting stuff and were not bound down by corporate bullshit and tight deadlines, maybe, and they just, okay, we are free, nobody will buy our game anyway, let's do something cool.
I mean, they had. I mean, the system was clean, was doing well in Europe. It's still popular in Europe. I don't know how it did in Japan. If it was
miserable.
Really, that's a shame.
Yeah.
Okay. I know it was Mark III, wasn't it, before the Master System? But yeah, I don't know if the Master System stuff made it over there. It's a shame because we're not even done with the Master System kicking ass. You know, there are still great games to come.
Exactly.
Even in like 92, 93.
And just one thing to keep in mind, these games didn't even come out in Japan mostly. Asterix never made it to Japan, for example.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, for me, I remember when I was a kid and I was finishing these games and the name I would see in the credits was Yoshio Wai.
Yeah.
And I remember being like, I don't know who you are, Yoshio Wai, but you make some fucking good games, man. If you even are a man, I don't know.
I checked him out. I think I wrote him in our notes somewhere. What else he did?
Yeah, yeah. He's worked on tons of stuff that I loved. Tons.
Yeah. Actually, and yeah, another one of the planners, I guess, on it, or one of the designers on this game did a bunch of other stuff, including the Master System conversion of Moonwalker. Worked on Asterix as well, worked on 8-bit Sonic the Hedgehog 2, the second Asterix game, and then would go on to work on Clockwork Knight 2 on the Saturn.
Asterix on the Master System, when you play it, is like, okay, yeah, this is Castle of Illusion. Like, it's the same HUD. It feels pretty exactly much like it, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like it as much because it's a bit more fiddly, but it is a great game.
So one thing I wanted to mention, though, that I just remembered, back in the day, they used to air a commercial on TV in America showing the Game Gear off, right?
Yeah.
And I did eventually get a Game Gear. A friend of mine had one, and he actually did have this game. I didn't get to play through it on there, but the thing that stuck out to me is I used to pay attention to these commercials. In the commercial, the first thing they show is Castle of Illusion for the Game Gear playing on a Game Gear screen, but they show the Genesis version.
Oh,
and I saw the parallax scrolling, and as a kid, I was obsessed with parallax scrolling, and it's not in the game. And I was like, what's going on? Where's the parallax scrolling?
That's real disgusting.
It's one of those stupid things where you're just like, what's going on? Like, why do I remember this? Or why do I even think about this? But I believe it was they just showed the Genesis game as a Game Gear game. And
I wouldn't put it past them, yeah.
I will note real briefly that the Game Gear version, because I've been talking about the Master System version, but the Game Gear version is almost exactly the same.
Yeah.
There are a few graphical changes, and obviously the screen estate isn't as big, but it's perfectly playable. It's very, very good version. It's almost, the way I see it is it's like, I don't know, like a Castle of Illusion version 1.1, like it's just a little bit more polished, maybe. Because of those graphical changes that make the treasure chest look a bit more standout. But also is one of the Game Gear games that I'm reasonably sure runs in Master System mode. So I think it actually is just the Master System version slightly changed.
Right, yeah.
But I don't have any way of confirming that. I just know that that's the mode it runs in. Because when I was trying to emulate it for the Game Gear directory, I was having a lot of trouble sorting it out because it's a Game Gear ROM that boots into Master System mode. And I was like, why is this happening?
That's right. It's a weird one in that regard. But the main difference I know is that they changed colors around.
Yes.
Because the Game Gear has an expanded color palette. I think it's like 4,096 colors available.
Yep. It's much, and Master System
is less so. So they were basically able to tweak some of the different colors, and the game looks slightly different in some stages as a result. Yep.
It is quite minor though. It's only just like the treasure chests have been redesigned and some other things have slight tweaks. Basically, there's not much to it, but it's a great game still.
So I think that kind of covers that one off.
I think
fantastic.
So I
mean, game.
I could go on about every single one individually, but I won't.
I don't blame you. It's good stuff. Yeah.
The boss that's a clock. How cool is that? The clock boss. Oh my god. Okay, I'm done now. I'm done.
Okay.
Yeah, just anybody listening get that game somehow because it's very cheap. It's worth every cent and it's a lot of fun.
Exactly. It's quite cheap. So especially the European version, it's nothing. Yeah. You get it. Okay. So actually after the Castle of Illusion on Mega Drive, that team went on to produce Quackshot, which we're not going to cover here today, but that's another great Disney game starring Donald Duck.
Yeah, stay tuned for Donald Duck episode coming eventually.
But following that game, they went on to do a sequel to Castle of Illusion with World of Illusion. Starring Mickey and Donald. And there's a good reason it specifies that, because this game becomes a two-player co-op game if you choose, and it has the two playable characters, Mickey and Donald. And that's also something that Capcom would do with the Magical Quest games, starting with the second one, The Great Circus Mystery, and then the third one, which is the best of those three that only came out in Japan at the time, is also Mickey and Donald. And the thing about this one, though, is that they clearly decided to try to make a different sort of game. Would you guys agree that this is, you can feel that it's a spiritual successor to Castle of Illusion, but there's much greater focus, even more so than the original, on sort of a set piece
based flow.
Like,
absolutely.
It's all about impressing the player with, I would say, phenomenal visual quality. Like, just the level of detail in the animations, in the sprite work, the background detail, it's all taken to the next level, and it looks incredible. But it also plays rather differently. Would you guys agree?
Yeah.
100%, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're not jumping on enemies anymore for a start. You're whipping them with a towel, like, in the locker room. It's weird.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it's very well animated towel.
It's extremely, I mean, everything in this game looks astonishing, especially when you're playing it on a proper CRT the way it's meant to be.
Yeah. I was just doing that today, and like, I was like, man, this looks just insanely good, even now.
Yeah, especially this, about it looking beautiful. I think one thing that really sticks out are the foreground objects in many stages.
Yeah.
Because you don't see that often in games at that time.
Yeah. It's just a constant parade of just astonishing looking visuals.
And I think the big difference between this one and Castle of Illusion is that they really moved away from the tile-based look.
Yeah.
Like, Castle of Illusion has this, like, squared-off tile-like look, which is very common in platform games of the era, where clearly World of Illusion is trying to make the backgrounds look, like, almost hand-painted.
And it works, yeah.
It does. It's almost like a precursor to the kind of stuff you'd see later in games like Earthworm Jim or Pitfall to Mine Adventure, where it's this more drawn-looking thing, but this came first.
I think the game looks so... This is going to sound like a strange criticism, but I think the game looks so good that the few brief moments when it doesn't are really, really jarring.
Yeah, you're right.
But then again, that's a weird criticism, I know. But, like, there are stages in this game that I think about, and I just kind of go, like, how could a human being have drawn this? It's ridiculous. The first stage, the stage where you're on the flying carpet. The frigging Christmas tree stage. Insane.
Wait, what's wrong with the magic? The magic carpet looks great, you're saying.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. Yeah. They all look incredible. Like, but then you've got the occasional bits where it's like, say, the text that comes up in the HUD is just like kind of weirdly jarring. And there's like a level where you're kind of just on some shelves that is just really weird and plain. But then, right after that, some
caves.
Yeah, then right after that, you're straight back into gorgeous stuff again. It's a very minor criticism.
I would say the shelf stage, while perhaps less impressive, there's still a lot of detail in it, and it kind of reminds me more of Castle of Illusion, though it has this nice extra perspective thing going on everywhere. You know, to give it sort of a pseudo 3D look. So
it all looks very good. It's just a very minor thing, really, very minor.
But as far as the game itself is concerned, the main differences come from the sort of controls and the way you attack. You already mentioned sort of the towel whipping, right? The magical towel. But the other big change is that it now has a running feature.
Yeah.
And
you move about as fast as you did in the original Castle of Illusion when you're running.
And that's an interesting choice, because the default walking speed in this is really slow, but it has this look of like, it's like Mickey looking around like he's concerned about what's happening. He's like, ooh, cautiously.
Lots of character in these animations.
It's very, very good. And then when he runs, it's kind of like what I would say is Mickey Mania style. That would come much later, but it's like, you know, that running with your arms outstretched towards the screen kind of look.
The thing that I find about this is what it does is it creates a feel of chaos and panic in a weird way. Like, the fact that Donald gets his massive ass stuck underneath, like, when you're just climbing under stuff and Mickey has to pull him out, it creates this idea that you're just kind of in over your head. And I think it's like, you know, stuff like Mickey having to pull Donald up and vice versa when you climb up gaps and things. And the fact, the way you run with your arms out like you're freaking out as well, the fact we can hit each other with the towels and wrap each other up momentarily, it just makes it all feel like Mickey and Donald, while they are friends, they're also kind of at odds in a weird, funny way. It does give the game a lot of character.
So, would you guys disagree if I said the game has a rather adventure-y vibe?
I agree.
With its set pieces and the slower pacing?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I mean, there's some stuff I don't adore. There, for example, like, I'm not just whinging, I swear I do like this game, but there are at least a couple of bits where at the end of the level you'll have a bunch of choices and only one of them is right and the other ones will dump you back to earlier in the level. And I don't know if there's a way you're actually supposed to know that or if it is just trial and error. It's the same with the doors towards the end of the game where going in certain doors will send you just to replay old levels again. And it almost feels like padding.
Yeah, that feels very padding.
And yet, weirdly enough, despite being padding, even if you go through every single one of the wrong doors like I did, the game is still only about 25 minutes long. And there's nothing wrong with that. I like short games. It's fun that you get off that you can just blast through it, you know? And my abiding memory of playing this game is just not being able to understand why the graphics were so good. Like, I don't know how they could do this. The final boss, the Big Pete, is just amazing when it's played on a CRT. It just looks absolutely outstanding.
But I also must admit, it's a game I didn't buy back in the day when it came out.
Yeah.
I mean, I loved the first Castle of Illusion, I loved Quackshot, but somehow it didn't grab my attention. I borrowed it once from a video center and gave it a try, but it never made me want to buy it, because maybe my tastes have had changed since then, but it's a bit short, a bit simple, and I want something different. I only got it later then.
Well, but hey, at least it's better than Fantasia.
I mean, what isn't?
Don't even get me started on that shitty fucking game. Sorry, swearing. Jesus Christ, that game is so bad. And they must have tricked so many people into thinking it would be good as well, because it was after Castle of Illusion.
I mean, just a quick about Fantasia. It's still so cheap in the second-hand market, even though it was removed from the shelves by Disney, from what I heard. So they must have sold a lot of these things. Poor people. A friend of mine bought it.
I have become a Mega Drive collector in the sort of... I buy loose carts mostly. I don't really care that much about like having complete... I just want to have the games to play. I'm not buying Fantasia, but no way. Don't want to play it. Don't want to look at it. Don't want to think about it. It's that bad. It's so bad, and it's so obviously bad from the first screen of the game as well.
I mean, it should be evident that it was developed by a Western studio. Infogrames worked on it.
And never really finished.
Not really finished either, because they needed to get it out in time. But yes, World of Illusion is significantly better than that, and definitely worth playing.
One thing I want to flag up real quick, if I'm not interrupting you, sorry. This game is quite impressive in the sense that while it is clearly a co-op game at its heart, if you play it as Mickey alone or Donald alone, you will see some different levels.
Yeah, that is nice.
That's right.
There are levels that are only in co-op mode as well, and that's really cool.
And that's what you can do if you have 8 megabit instead of 4 as the first games.
And again, that's what Capcom did with their Mickey games as well, with the co-op play.
Yeah.
And that really, I don't know why that became a thing from two separate developers, but I like it in this case.
Yeah. It's nice. I mean, they didn't stick with it really, but
they did
a magical quest, but not.
So one of the things though that makes this really interesting, the co-op play, is like, how one player can assist the other, right? Like Donald or Mickey can lower like a rope and help the other one climb up a platform.
Or pull him out from under a thing with his massive ass.
Which makes it great for playing with somebody who's maybe less experienced at these sorts of games, because you can kind of help each other out in a way that's really fun.
Yeah. I gotta say, like, this game's like absurdly easy overall. Even easier than the Castle, I would say. The only thing that does make it challenging is if the other player is screwing with you. But there's very little in the way of actual credible sort of threats here. Even the final boss is laughably easy.
I think there are a few instant death situations. But
yeah,
not too
Donald Duck has that one stage where he's on the River Rapids, which is a bit of a
nightmare. That's what I was thinking about,
yeah.
Exactly.
But yeah, even like there's a stage I absolutely love in this game where you go into a sunken, like abandoned ship.
Yeah.
And it's all full of like tight spaces and stuff. And then the boss is like a swordfish that has an actual saw for a nose, I think. Or a shark or something similar like that. I forget if it's a shark
sword
or a swordfish.
Shark.
Yeah, sword shark, both. That'll do. Yeah, it's a great game. After each level, you gain some kind of new spell, but they're not actually have much gameplay. It's mostly just the thing you do at the beginning of each level. There's the one you get that lets you summon the magic carpet, so you can do it at that stage. And that's an incredible looking stage, as we've mentioned. It does feel like a big sort of a step up from Castle of Illusion, but in the quest to make it co-op, the levels do feel a bit wider. In a way, like, there's not as much going on. There's not as many, like, enemies and things, but it's still great. It's still definitely a recommended Mega Drive game, in my opinion.
I agree. Yep. So I think we can all basically say that this one is perhaps not as memorable of a game as the prior two, but it sure does look beautiful and is still worth playing, and it's cheap.
Again, I think very cheap.
Yeah, it's worth mentioning, I think, that it does repeat some bits from Castle of Illusion. Like, there's another spiderweb stage, and there's
but
that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's pretty worth mentioning.
It's just a nice throwback, I think. Yeah. I mean, you have even the clown boss from the first game is coming back as a regular enemy here.
Yeah.
It's smaller, but he's in there.
That's right. This one didn't really get any ports outside of the Mega Drive Mini, though, did it?
No, I don't think
it's the only place.
I think this is the only time it's been re-released, yeah, which is wild, but I don't understand why they never did a collection, honestly, but, you know.
Probably Disney licensing stuff.
Most likely, although nowadays,
if
Digital Eclipse wants to, maybe, you know, I'm sure they're trying like hell, to be honest.
And just, so I got to throw it out there just for fun, but for those that weren't sure, the Japanese title of this was I Love Mickey and Donald, The Mysterious Magic Box.
I mean, fitting title. It's what it's about.
Yeah. I mean,
One more thing I like about the game, by the way, quickly to mention that. There's this nice effect when they disappear behind some sheets, and you only see the shadows, and that's a nice effect.
That's really cool. That's quite towards the end of the game, isn't it? Starts happening a lot. Yeah, that's a cool effect, yeah. I mean, another remarkable thing, that there are so many enemies, sprites. Like, there's so many different types of enemies in this game. I mean, you eventually start to meet stuff from the Alice in Wonderland Disney movie, like the card soldiers, and Mad Hatter turns up and stuff. I think that one of the bosses is the witch from Sword in the Stone, but I might be misremembering that.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
awesome game, and it has weird six-legged spider for a boss as well.
Oh yeah,
with wearing gloves, six legs, and
the one that crawls on the foreground and background layer.
Yeah,
that's pretty neat looking. That looks good.
But let's move on, because I'm amazed we've managed to get an hour out of those games, to be honest. But let's move on. Yeah, they're
that's
great games, yeah. But next up in 1992, back on the 8-bit again, the Master System and Game Gear, Land of Illusion.
That's another banger.
Land of Illusion starring Mickey Mouse, another banger. There are a lot of people who prefer this to Castle, and I kind of respect that opinion, but I disagree with it. If only because this is a game that is so much longer and more involved that you would struggle to do it in one sitting, maybe.
Yeah, it's a pretty big game. I really like this one, though.
It's
I think this one is
brilliant.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, there's so much
we
going on.
We played it again on the Analog Pocket these days.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I've played this again recently as well, and it's excellent. It really is excellent.
Yeah, just looking at the game, again, it could be a good 16-bit game.
In many ways, it comes close, yes.
Yeah.
But it basically builds on the last game, though, and mechanically. Yeah. Unlike World of Illusion, this feels like a direct sequel. to Castle Illusion.
There are more like there's more animation frames. There's more of everything, basically.
There's awesome one-off situations with the snake in the first level, where you just throw the apple into the snake's mouth. The snake closes its mouth, is happy, and you walk on. This is one screen you will see for a few seconds, and they put in so much work for that.
Yeah. The snake's like coiled around this tree and running up its back. It's really cool. But that's what makes this game stand out to me is, okay, first of all, it's even harder. Like, this is actually quite a hard game.
This one's tough.
The levels are completely rammed to the gills with gimmicks in a good way. There is constantly weird shit happening and clever stuff, even stuff that I've not seen again in any other game. Like, there's also an overworld map now that you can walk around on and revisit levels in case you want to go back and collect hidden stuff, because there's actual progression in this game. You collect items that give you, not powers, but like you get a shrinking potion that lets you become small. You get climbing gear that lets you climb walls. And if you go back to old levels, once you've got that stuff, you will find stuff hidden in them.
And just to clarify that, unlike the original games, which had sort of the door system, which retained the side-scrolling view, this one has an almost Mario World, Mario 3-esque overworld map, where you kind of like just move your small character between the different maps and you go in, which is something I'm a big fan of. And I think that is one of the reasons I really like this game.
It's great.
I have to admit, slightly more than the
I respect that. I can see why. Like, I genuinely can see why. I do think that nostalgia is a huge factor for me, but
I'm pretty sure that the designers played a lot of Mario World back in the day, because you have many elements, you know. You have the overworld map, you have stuff like you can quit levels that you once visited after a certain point.
Even the way they like do shading on, like, when you're in that underground area with the water, like, if you look at the rock formations, just like the way it's shaded and colored reminds me so much of Nintendo's Super NES work.
I do agree. I think there's definitely Mario World influence here. I mean, even all the way down to like the blocks that you switch on and off really remind me of Switch Palace blocks. So it's not obviously exactly the same. There are other comparisons. There's multiple exits to some of the stages, like at least one of the stages.
The water stage.
And the stage that changes when you've beaten the castle, the water level essentially rises. Weird things like if you use the there are power stars hidden in Castle of Illusion on the Master System, which upgrade your health up to 5 maximum. There's only 2 of them. You start with 3. You can get 4. The first one is in the toy factory, and the second one is in the clock tower. The clock tower. Excuse me. And in this game, there's one of those in like every stage. But you still can't go above 5, so it really is just for bragging rights if you find all of them.
You start just with 2, and it's tough in the beginning.
Yeah, you start with 2. I forgot about that. But yes, for example, they're hidden in really devious ways. Like, for example, the only way to get the one in the water stage is to beat the castle and come back. And then one of the areas of the water stage has been flooded with more water that then means you can get up in a little gap in the ceiling, keep swimming up, and you'll find it up there in a way you couldn't get to before. There are some that you need to become. The one on the flower field stage needs you to become small Mickey and then bounce continuously on an enemy for almost half the level to the left until you find it on a random platform. They're really devious, and I love that they bothered. It makes me happy that they bothered. But no, this game is definitely much, much more challenging than that.
Another interesting thing that makes it even more challenging, though, is that unlike the first one, this one does run, and it has a proper Game Gear conversion that runs in the Game Gear resolution, which means it's basically zoomed and cropped. So everything looks bigger on the screen, but you see less of the level. But I guess they tweaked the colors as well. And honestly, just looking at it again, I think this looks better than pretty much anything that you could have seen on, say, the Game Boy. And I love the Game Boy, but this looks incredible.
Yeah. I mean, this is like, for the Master System, this might be the best looking Master System game apart from maybe Jurassic Park. And even then, I think it's a toss up.
Yeah.
Game Gear has a lot more competition.
It does.
Yeah. Now, my criticism of this game, if I may, is there's a frigging boss, which is like a crab, that is really, really hard. you're swimming underwater, so you've got an air meter going. You have to throw a barrel at it, and you can only hit it in what seems like completely arbitrary times. And if you miss, he'll do this move where he creates whirlpools. You have to wait for ages and ages to attack him again, and it's very easy to run out of time if you don't get the rhythm right.
Oh, that air meter is caught me off guard for a few times when I started playing again, because I forgot you have to stay on the top of the water for a while to get the air meter full again. You don't just pop up.
Yeah.
It's full, go back down. You have to wait.
No, yeah, because...
And if you've read about that, you're in for a bad time.
The Master System, the first game in Castle of Illusion, didn't have that. There were swimming sections, but there's no air meter. Land of Illusion is essentially Castle of Illusion Master System sort of with knobs on it. It's like everything's been like...
And a Nintendo influence. I mean, yes. They even have like freaking spike balls in the game with like eyes, which looks extremely Mario.
They look like Goddess, you're absolutely right, yeah.
The whole thing is very influenced by it.
Every stage there'll be something that will make you go, that's cool. Even now there are gimmicks that I haven't seen reused. Like there's an auto-scroll, except there are buttons on the screen that make this auto-scroll go backwards.
yeah, it was cool.
So
yeah.
You need to stand on them. You need to stand on them until they reveal the next button you'll need to press. But when you step off the one you're standing on, the auto scroll will start going back to the way again. So you're basically almost wrestling with the auto scroll in a way that is so meta. Almost.
Yeah, like, that's beautiful game logic.
I've never seen anything like it before, like since. It's just really cool and thoughtful. There's a stage where you're being chased by this fire guy who leaves a trail of fire behind them.
Oh yeah, that one's great.
And it's like, really, just the game's full of stuff like that, full of it. There's even a bit where you need to use a gacha claw machine to pick up a key by standing on the switch for long enough and then jumping off. And it's just full of ideas, constant ideas. Like, they couldn't stop thinking of cool things and they kept making the game longer. Like, there's way more levels in this than there were in Castle.
I almost feel like I would have liked to have seen this made for the Mega Drive at this point, right?
I mean, in a sense, yeah, but then I wouldn't have been able to play as a kid, so no.
Okay, fair enough, but still.
I get that, yeah.
From a pure game design perspective, I do think this is better than World of Illusion. It's a better platformer, and it's the kind of stuff that we didn't see that often on Mega Drive at that time, so... Yeah.
I think it's a shame that there was never a third Mega Drive Illusion game, so I think it could have been special.
Yeah, I agree.
Because what we did get instead was Mickey Mania, and I have a lot of problems with Mickey Mania.
but you could argue that World of Illusion was the third one, right? If you count Quackshot. Like, it's not technically Mickey Mouse, but it kind of is, right?
But yeah, if you want, of course, that fairy tale mood, you don't get that with Quackshot, an entirely different beast.
No, that's true.
No, you get the Indiana Jones mood with Quackshot. Yeah. That game kicks ass. It's a great game. I was quite surprised to hear that it was directed by the same person, because it's so different. Like, I mean, it has a similar visual style, but that's about it, really.
Yeah, the sad thing that Perth is doing Kingdom Hearts games nowadays. Well,
I mean, it's sad, but Kingdom Hearts rules, so it's not that sad.
Oh, so you're Kingdom Hearts. Okay, you like it. All right.
Yeah, I'm afraid I'm a Kingdom Hearts loser. Yeah.
All right, all right.
That's all right. We forgive you.
Yep.
don't even. I've got my book coming out soon. My book, All Games Are Good. Please buy it. And the longest single chapter is on Kingdom Hearts 358 Days Over 2. It's just drivel. And it's just like pages and pages of just gushing about how much I love that game. I'm the only person on planet who likes the game that much, I think.
Well, good for you.
Land of Illusion, unfortunately, is not the final 8-bit Illusion game, because they did make one more 3 years later, bafflingly, which is Legend of Illusion, starring Mickey Mouse, which was kind of unceremoniously dropped, because now I consider myself to be a huge fan of the Illusion series, and I always was, and I didn't know Legend of Illusion existed until, like, emulation
late,
days.
Didn't it?
Yeah, in 95, yeah. But I had no idea this existed, and I was absolutely fascinated. This is how I found out about the Master System being so popular in Brazil for so long, because I was like, what do you mean there's a third Illusion game? No, there isn't.
Didn't this get a Master System release, like, in Brazil
or
something?
It did, via Tectoy in 98.
That's what I thought.
I think it was just kind of a Game Gear kind of port, but,
but
it was good. Yeah, I mean, I say it was good. It wasn't, because Legend of Illusion is fine. It's a fine game, and in this series, that's not really good enough, you know? It feels wrong, just completely wrong. You throw marbles like you did in the Mega Drive one, but it feels wrong. It doesn't work. The levels are designed awkwardly, so they keep flicking, like, flick screening between, like, the higher view and the lower view. The camera keeps going up and down when you climb things, and yeah, it's, like, yeah, really weird and wrong. The game's also really short, even compared to, like, the first one. And the level design just isn't there. It's just not got any of the intricacy. Yeah. It's not got the secrets. It's just, I mean, it's not good enough. It's fine.
You can't just see it's been outsourced. It's not made by the original team.
So yeah. I think it was developed somewhat by Aspect.
Yep.
Which did a lot of stuff. They did Axe Battler.
I like Aspect. I got a lot of love.
They did some
Aspect
good stuff, so that's the
they
thing.
They made a good Batman Returns game.
They did. They worked on some of the Sonic games.
Yeah, Sonic 2 on the Master System, not the Game Gear, is very good, I think.
Yeah.
And Deep Dark Trouble was fine, you know?
It was, but they also did the Virtua Fighter animation game and Sonic Blast, if you remember that one.
Which was,
Sonic Blast is not good.
No, it's not. It's a stinker. Didn't they make, eventually, am I thinking of Ancient, who made God of Protectors in the end? That was Ancient,
company,
wasn't it? That was Ancient,
yeah,
sorry. Ancient. But they were associated with the Master
different
System as well, right? They did the Sonic Master System.
They did Sonic 1.
If you can't have one called Aspect and one called Ancient, it's too confusing.
Right, but
maybe different aspect of the Ancients.
Still, it's Aspect. They did some good work, and
they did.
This just isn't as good as some of the other stuff they made.
In the Game Gear directory, I've noted, like, you can tell when a game is made by Aspect almost immediately because they use the same sound fonts and the same game feel. They made Coca-Cola Kid. That's a really good game. I don't know if anyone's played that one. A Japan-only platformer for the Game Gear that's advertising Coca-Cola, and for some reason it's bafflingly really good.
Still, I would say that Legend of Illusion at least looks good.
Yes,
visually speaking,
good,
it's very detailed and lots of shading and intricacy in the colors. And
it's got the story sequences from Land of Illusion as well. There are some Disney kind of, like, you meet Goofy in it and stuff, but it's just weird and not quite there. Still, you know, if you happen to get a copy of it, you probably wouldn't hate it.
Yeah, it's not actually a bad game. It's just
it's not.
It's very,
and again, very affordable.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it? I thought it was expensive, this one. I mean, the Master System one definitely is, for obvious reasons.
Of course, but the Game Gear ones are affordable. Around 10 to 15.
I did not know that. I might have to grab that at some point.
The Japanese one seems to be expensive, though.
Oh, that's a shame.
No surprise.
I think in the UK it might be too expensive still, but I'll have to check. And, you know, you can't say that this is a bad game, considering that the next Illusion game, which was, God, how much longer was this? Nearly 20 years later.
Yeah, almost. Yeah, 17 years later.
Epic Mickey, Power of Illusion. Now, I remember when this got announced because I was really excited about it. Because it's a 2D platformer called Power of Illusion. Purposely, they were trying to get my attention. It looks great. And I'm like, oh my God, it's going to be amazing. New Epic Mickey, Power of Illusion. They're going there. They're bringing back the Of Illusion thing. They know they're doing this for me specifically. It's being made by the people who made Henry Hatsworth, which kicked ass, and Monster Tale, which was really shit. But it doesn't matter, because we know they can make a good game. And no, it's garbage, unfortunately. It's really, really bad. I like Epic Mickey. I'm not going to pretend I don't. I think it's cool.
Yeah,
it's nice,
I wish that the first one would get some kind of HD re-release, because it's that good. But no, it's locked to the Wii. No, I love my Wii, but come on, that game deserves to look HD, come on. But no, Epic Mickey Power of Illusion is a chore to play, an actual chore.
Yeah.
As I wrote in the notes, it's boring with 8 O's.
Yeah, you are constantly having to stop, pull out the stylus, and color shit in. Like,
also, constantly some dialogue. This goes on for far too long.
Yeah. It's very slow, like the original Class of Illusion, and it borrows the sound effects from it to trick you into thinking it's good.
Yeah.
The problem,
one thing it does that I think is kind of... Sorry, go on.
No, just, like, it is slow. But, like you said, the other games were also slow. But the problem here is that slowness extends to so many elements of the game.
Yes,
the level
design
can't support the slowness. It's just boring to walk through. All those cutscenes and dialogue sequences and just everything feels like it's drawn out just to make the game last longer.
Yeah. There's a lot of elements from other Disneys, like you meet, like, Beast, the Bell and stuff.
Scrooge.
Like,
it's so basic. Okay, here's Scrooge. He wants his lucky dime. Here is Bell, who wants the broom or something like that. It's so obvious. It's that Exactly. This is like a playable Disney store to me. It's all that cloying Disney pap away without any of what makes the stuff interesting.
It just bums me out so bad because, like, visually speaking, this looks like a dream. Like,
it's beautiful.
If you had a game that looked like this with the design of those originals.
Again, I mean, if they had just done like a remake of Castle of Illusion,
or just make a game in that vein, like they didn't need to do this, what they made.
Well, to be honest, I'm pretty sure that they had Disney breathing down their necks, explaining, you have to have this dialogue in here. This has to take exactly this long. You need this sequence here.
I don't know if that's true, because Monster Tail is really bad, and it has all the same problems that this game has, and that was their passion project.
I mean, I bought it back in the day, and I don't remember it being that bad, but it's been a while, and I've played it, so...
Yeah. It's probably not as bad as this, but no, Epic Mickey Power of Illusion, like, as I mentioned earlier... I was genuinely quite incensed that they would invoke my beloved Illusion series for something this crappy. Like, it felt like cynicism, real cynicism, you know? To go like, hey, you remember this thing that you love? Well, this is the same as that. Oh, it's like, it's shit. I was bummed out by that. And it's one of the reasons why I was not looking forward to the remake of Castle of Illusion when they announced it. And it came out 2012. It was Sega Studios Australia. I think it was their second and final game after making an Olympics game, London Olympics.
I think so too, yeah.
And it blew me away because it's really good. Like, I was astonished at how good this was. I'm not saying it's like a... I don't like it obviously as much as the original, because how could I? But I like it better than the Mega Drive one. I'm sorry. I do. I think it's more fun. They took elements from both games to create this... really charming, enjoyable platformer. It was genuinely challenging in places, and it looks fantastic. They introduced,
I think, the 3D stuff is really well implemented.
Yeah, they introduced some 3D platforming stuff that's never really goes beyond Crash Bandicoot sort of levels of exploration, and it feels seamless. There's maybe a bit too much collecting to get 100%. Like, you have to get all of the gems, and some of them are really quite well hidden, which is fine with me, but when you play through a really long level and you miss one of 200 gems, it's kind of annoying. But that's the kind of thing that would make me go, right, I'm doing this. The fact is, it's a game you can beat in about 2 hours, and then you've only got time trials left that no one on the planet has ever bothered doing, and that's fine. I don't know if maybe you guys didn't like this as much as me, but I was genuinely heartened at how good this was. It felt like they got it. They understood what Castle of Illusion was supposed to be like, you know?
Oh, I agree. It's really a shame, though, that this was the end of that studio, given how much passion there was for this. And, I mean, these are the guys that were also doing, I think, that... was it Golden Axe? Golden Axe.
Oh, Golden Axe.
It was these
whole
guys,
prototype. Actually. I think it was the same.
Oh, the prototype. Okay.
Yeah, the prototype.
Because they were not happy about that when that got dropped.
Exactly. Because Sega just did it without consulting.
I think Sega
them.
Just kind of threw them under the bus as well. In a little the sort bit, of like,
And they gave it this punny name that made it even look worse when it was released, the prototype.
The Golden Axe series, man.
Golden Axed.
Yeah.
They called it Golden Axed, I think. And they didn't find that. Too fun.
No.
I cannot think of a Sega series that has been treated worse than Golden Axe. Like, it's really difficult to think of one. I wrote about it recently, and it's like, this series has, like, one unambiguous good game in it, maybe two at a stretch, and the rest of them are just, like, whatever or terrible, and it's still considered a prestige Sega thing for some reason. I don't get it. I mean, I love Golden Axe, but it sucks. Like, it mostly sucks. I'm sorry. I don't think that's a hot take. I really don't. Like, Revenge of Death had a great, the original Golden Axe, great, everything else, like, no, whatever.
Golden Axe 3 is great. It's secretly great.
I dispute that strongly, but we can have it out on the dedicated Golden Axe episode. All right.
And 2 has very good music, at least.
Oh, so yeah.
It's 3. It's
just the same game with worse sound effects.
3 is, I suppose, like, a little bit alien because it's the one that never came out over here.
3 is one of those games where I always heard for years that it was bad, so I just ignored it. And then I finally sat down and played through it, and I was like, wait a minute, this has, like, way more depth in the combat, more like a Streets of Rage 3 style game. It plays closer to Death Adder than the other ones.
I sat down to play it recently, and I came to a different conclusion, but that's fascinating. Maybe I'll check it out again sometime. Because I want to like it.
And also the soundtrack is bonkers. It's so good.
But yeah, so anyway, and that concludes this Golden Axe episode. No, sorry. I kid. But no, the remake. Did you play this, Thomas?
Of course, yeah. I got it on the PS3 and had a good time with it.
Yeah, I played it on, I think now, because the PC one is the only one that you can get running at 60 frames per second. Not that I was just going to say,
that drives me nuts. Like, yeah, yeah, the game was capped at 30 on the consoles, but also on PC initially. But
yes,
you could unlock the frame rate.
I think they actually just patched it now. I could be wrong.
So it's properly patched now. Good.
Yeah, I think it has been, because whenever I've played it on PC.
So there is a 60 FPS PC version now. That is good to know, actually.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah. I had it running like that almost because there was a fan patch made almost immediately.
Yeah,
to fix
exactly.
It.
Same.
But I think it was then shortly afterwards patched to just be at 60. Thank God. So yeah, play it on the PC. I think you can still buy it. It went down for a bit, but I think you can buy it at the moment.
Oh yeah, it's worth getting. I think it's still.
It's even worth if you have to play it on your phone. It's worth it because it's that good. Like it plays really well on mobile as well. Yeah, it did. Okay. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
But I've played this on PC, PS3, and 360, like and phone. I love this game, and I'll buy every version of it that exists eventually.
It's just a shame that the M2 port of the original is not. Yeah.
I think if you pre-ordered.
Yes,
I have it for some reason, but
it was on PS3 only, as it was a pre-order bonus for this game.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's where it came from.
The M2 port. Yeah, we talked about it earlier briefly. So if you didn't pre-order this game back when it was 2011 or whatever, too bad. You're never getting that unless you put like jailbreak your PS3, which you should never do. Obviously, it would be against the law. I think that brings us to a rather handsome close, to be honest.
I think you're right.
Yep.
But I think that covered a lot of ground and.
Yeah.
Hopefully people listening have enjoyed our discussion on it, and maybe if you haven't played it, check it out.
Definitely do. Now, we've talked before about where to play these games, but, you know, of course, other than emulation, you're not going to be able to play those Master System ones, so, you know, have at it. The Mega Drive ones are on the Mega Drive Mini, or, you know, again, emulation, have at it. Who cares? Doesn't matter.
And at least one case of the games being not being affordable and not going for...
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, and that.
For fortune.
Yeah, buy them. Don't have that emulation. Don't listen to me. I'm a nasty boy. Castle Illusion Remake, you can just buy, I think. I think it still goes on sale fairly routinely, but you might want to buy it before it might get delisted again, so buy it, please.
30 yep. euros right now.
Epic Mickey Power of Illusion, simply do not play it. It is bad.
It's the worst one, yeah.
Yeah, there is no reason to play it. It's the worst Epic Mickey game, and that's saying something, believe me.
It's one of the worst Mickey games in general, I would say.
That's a very, very big net, but yes, I would agree with that.
I mean, it's a huge net, but when you factor in...
When you factor in the expectation, then it's one of the worst.
Certainly. Yeah.
I gotta be legit, you know what game I like more than Epic Mickey Power of Illusion is Mickey's Ultimate Challenge, and that's Edutainment. I prefer that, okay? I think that was, like, way forwards, one of their first games, actually, interestingly enough.
Is it? No.
Was it really? Wow.
Yeah, I think it was one of them. Yeah, it's wild, right?
Oh.
From that to cleavage and boobs everywhere. My God. Sorry, I love you way forward.
They found their calling.
They did find their calling, yeah. Anyway, yes, thank you very much for listening. Now, what I'd like to say is what I want to do, listeners, now, you know, chime in if this is something that you're up for. There are a lot of licensed platformers and licensed games out there that don't get talked about enough, and I would like to cover those games. So if that's something you're interested in, let me know. Whether or not you let me know, I'm probably still going to do it.
So there is a series of games I can very much recommend, and we should have John on board if we talk about that, and John knows what I'm talking about.
Are you talking about the Otter Fence again?
I am.
Okay, well, I'm not doing the Otter Fence. It's just not going to happen. I'm sorry.
Well, what did you claim,
John? The Otter Fence dreams. Bury them in the ground and never let anyone dig them up.
Do you really want Jeremy to take away Stu's ability to make podcasts? Like, don't do that to him.
Okay, you're right.
But no, if you're interested in that, please let me know. If you have any thoughts or games that you want to hear, let me know. I have plenty of ideas on the docket, believe me. This is my calling. Talking about these games is my calling. So, yeah, look forward to that. Let's go and talk to our guests about where we can find them on the internet, as if we don't all already know. John, where can we find you on the internet?
Oh, yes, as always, you can find me over on Eurogamer.net, as well as youtube.com/digitalfoundry, where we post all kinds of good stuff there, including the DF Retro series. You'll also find me on Twitter at Dark1X.
And Thomas, where can we find you?
So if you want my opinion on the Artifacts and more, you can find me on Twitter at Bimbo Fortuna. And if you want to read my stuff in German, buy M Games in German stores. I'm afraid no English version there. Or just visit my lectures at the university, and I might also talk about Artifacts-related stuff. If you're lucky. One of my colleagues produced an Artifacts game.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, boy.
Well, tell them I hate them, okay?
I will.
I'm kidding, of course. Thanks very much. Now, if you are a fan of Retronauts, if you have enjoyed this episode and you are not a member of the Patreon, first of all, but second, if you want, I got them. A mere $5 will get you many, many extra things, including a week early access to all of our weekly episodes, so you can be the coolest kid in the playground, and also 2 extra full length episodes per month of Retronauts. That's an insane amount of extra content right there. So many podcasts that they'll be coming out of your ears, and they'll all be fascinating and hilarious and insightful and thought-provoking, and you're going to love it. Speaking of thought-provoking, the ever-excellent Diamond Fight has been producing This Week in Retro columns, and also producing them as podcasts, so you can listen to even more content. They're very good, you too. Do. I recommend those. And you also get access to the Discord, so you can come on there and say, Stu, you don't do a very good job with the Patreon stuff at the end of each episode, and I'll have to concede that you're correct, and I've done a terrible job. Thank you. Thanks very much again for listening. Have a magical afternoon. Have a mouse-tacular afternoon. There you go. Thank you.